Welcome to Teach Languages Online, the podcast dedicated to bringing you the best advice about your online teaching business. I'm Lindsay Williams, an online language teacher from the UK, and I'm your host. Each episode, before we begin, I like to recommend something for you, and this time it is my free My Month in Teaching planner. Now, you may know, especially if you're a language learner yourself, that as well as the Solo Language Learner Planner and the Online Language Teacher Planner, I have a free monthly planner for language learners. And there's one for teachers as well. So get your free teacher planner for this month at lindsaydoeslanguages.com/free-teacher-planner. Now, let's get into today's show. Time for another interview this episode. This time it's with Sam Grigg from Discover Fluency. Sam has been teaching English online for a couple of years now and took a real switch when he started because his background is in design. So I wanted to bring him on the podcast to talk about that and to talk about design and ask him how, if at all, that has helped him with the online teaching side of things and what it's like getting started doing this in a much more modern context as well. My own experience of this was back in 2013, 2014, so a lot has changed in that time. So without further ado, let's listen in to my interview with Sam. Hello, this episode I've invited Sam Grigg on the show. Now, Sam is the man behind Discover Fluency, which you may have seen on Instagram, as he's also just started hosting the Language Diary Challenge. And with a background in design, he's turned his hobby and passion for language learning into work, which is one of the things we'll be discussing in this interview, as that's something I really respect about Sam and something I think a lot of us can relate to, because chances are, if you're listening to this, you love languages as much as me and Sam do. So Sam, hello, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, thank you. Did I miss anything there? Anything else you want to add?
No, I think you covered it. Yeah, previously design, language nerd, now language teacher as well. Yeah, I think that covers all the bases, yeah.
Cool. And so were you always interested in language learning?
No, actually at school, I guess it's kind of the typical British scenario that I was terrible at languages in school. And I did French and German for I can't tell you how many years and could basically do nothing. And then when I left school, I maybe had a B in German, but actually that B related to no actual usable language. And then I just basically forgot everything. Up until that point, I was convinced, I guess like most people, I couldn't do languages. I was the problem, it's impossible. And then it sort of only changed probably a year after I graduated university, actually. So yeah, for a long time, I never thought I'd be able to do it.
Cool. Oh, that's so cool that we'll talk more about that later. But I think that idea of it actually being a later in life passion and interest and then still becoming something that you do for work is wonderful. So in terms of that work then, how long have you been teaching? Because we mentioned in the intro, you've got a background in design. How long have you been teaching online and how did you get started with that?
So I sort of officially started teaching, I'd say probably January 2018. So literally probably it's my 2-year anniversary now.
Ooh, congratulations.
Thank you. and to be honest, when I started, it was really, I was working in a design job and I was kind of, the job was quite stressful, really busy. And I kind of just decided that actually I was having so much fun studying my languages and, you know, Italian at that point. And I just decided, right, is there a way that I can either reduce the amount of work I'm doing and do something with languages that will maybe bring me some money, or potentially just do it and make it my job because I just loved it so much. And I just thought, okay, I made a list of all the different ways I could use languages to maybe make some money. And teaching was just kind of top of the list as something I could start straight away and that I wouldn't need to maybe go and get a degree in something like translation or something like that to do it. So to do it, I did a TEFL course. So I did one that was kind of a combination of online and there was like a weekend face-to-face course where you did some sort of classroom exercises and stuff like that. So that was mainly aimed at people who were going who wanted to go abroad to maybe teach to primary school kids, or really sort of children generally in, say, China or abroad generally. But really, I did that just to give myself a bit of confidence, because, you know, I love languages. And so the more I've been learning, I was learning about sort of the equivalence in English and how the grammar works and all that kind of stuff, as more than just sort of a native level usage. But I just didn't feel confident enough to just be like, right, okay, I'm going to just do this. So I wanted to have something to sort of prove to myself, okay, you do know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just did that TEFL course. And then actually, my Italian language partner was basically the first person I met and started practicing languages with him. So I just sort of called him up and I said, look, I'm going to do some lessons. Can I just do some practice ones with you? Because I felt really comfortable with him. And so I actually did some with him, pretending he was like a new student and going through some of the stuff I'd done.
Cool.
And then that was, I probably did that once or twice. And then literally 1st of January, I just set up my teaching account on iTalki and just put my availability in and just started teaching.
And were you still working the design job at that point?
Yeah. At that time I was working sort of full-time hours. So, you know, about 35 hours, something like that. And then after a couple of weeks, I was doing probably about 12 hours in the evenings after work of
lessons
as well. So
just a few weeks in.
Yeah, I think it was maybe, yeah, middle to end of January. So literally probably 2 or 3 weeks. I basically in the evening, I had maybe 4 or 5 days a week. I allowed maybe 3 hours. So probably 15 in total. Mm-hmm. And after a couple of weeks, almost all of that was full. Mainly because I went in with sort of a really low price just to get some experience for myself, really. So in terms of price, it wasn't very off-putting to lots of students. But yeah, it happened really quickly. And I remember I was talking to my wife and we'd sort of said, right, we're just going to test this out and we'll just see. And we were like, right, so when we get to, I don't know, June or 100 lessons, we'll just figure that out. We'll just have a look at it. And then it got to March and I was like, yeah, we're almost at 100 already. What? It was kind of like, oh my God, actually this could be a job. This could just be not, you know, not like a little bit of money on the side or something. This could be an actual thing I could do.
Yeah.
And so I kind of did that. I think it was probably maybe 6 months. And then, I just basically sort of, life kind of happened and loads of crazy stuff all happened at the same time. And so I just sat down and I said, right, I'm going to do it. And so I just handed my notice in and I opened up my availability. And then as of, I think it was like, say, August 2018, mm-hmm. I was doing it. So I've taught full time now for well over a year.
Wow. What I love about this is, number one, what you mentioned about qualifications, and number two, the transition. It's so refreshing to get the chance to talk about that with someone, because I think that there is perhaps a bit of a perception, maybe people listening to this have felt this as well, of like, well, I want to get started doing this, but that means I have to drop everything, quit my job, give it my all, and go and get a degree and a master's and a doctorate and blah, 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 right? It's not the case. And it's not to like poo-poo any of that. Obviously, it's great to have qualifications. But like you say, you recognize that I can do this with a TEFL. Let's start there. If you want to get more later, of course you can. But you don't need all of that stuff. You don't need this bulk of qualifications to begin. You can definitely start with a TEFL, especially obviously teaching English we're talking about there.
Exactly. And I think it's like, so the TEFL I did, if maybe people have read about the different ones, like I did level 3, which is kind of the standard level. And then you have the sort of bigger qualifications like a CELTA. So something that, like that would be, I guess, level 5 that you would need to go and teach in university or something like that. And it's, but even doing that, a lot of the stuff just from being a student was kind of seemed fairly obvious to me. It wasn't sort of and actually it didn't really teach me a lot of, it didn't say, oh, here's all English grammar, now you know everything. Actually, it was more like, this is how you transfer knowledge, all the actual stuff I needed to learn to actually teach.
Right.
I had to do that myself. So it was kind of like, really, now I wouldn't say maybe the TEFL course was necessary, but confidence-wise, I felt a lot more secure in myself. But actually, it was just my passion for languages and saying, okay, this student needs this. Okay, I'm going to find the solution to that and figure out how to explain it. And it's just grown as I've done it. So now, you know, my sort of bank of knowledge and how to explain things is massively more than when I started. But, you know, you've got to start somewhere. So it just, yeah.
Yeah, that bank of knowledge isn't going to build up if you're not starting, if you're just, you know, learning the theory and trying to learn about it without actually doing it, without getting out there and practicing and teaching. So, yeah, I agree. Okay, then. So you transitioned and you quit the job about 6 months or eight months, right? August, mm-hmm. 7 or 8 months. And I want to go back to that a little bit. So that job, your background was in design in terms of work. Has that helped you at all as you've gone on to do more? Because, like, you know, there's a lot that a TEFL certificate can teach you in terms of classroom stuff and teachery stuff. But when you're teaching online, and especially when you begin to move off of platforms, you're then doing a lot of other stuff yourself, perhaps for the first time. Whereas with you, with that background in design, I'm wondering how that helped you.
Yeah. It's you know, like you're always saying about the hats, you kind of have to do everything and wear all the hats and stuff. And it's, so I guess, like, obviously I started a blog as a learner just to sort of share what I was doing and, you know, sort of sharing my goals of Clear the List that you know.
I was going to say, you've done Clear the List for a while, right?
Yeah. And actually that was kind of one of the things that originally when I started learning languages, it was just kind of a bit of fun, or I was doing it for a bit of travel. And it was only a couple of years ago, probably actually when I started teaching, that I was like, do you know what? I do love this so much. I'm going to get just a bit more serious about it. And, you know, sort of serious in the sense that actually I don't just randomly just open an app on my phone and just play a few games or something. Like, I'm actually going, okay, I want to really improve and, you know, try and do something different, or, you know, try and watch some TV or something like that. And so, yeah, when I was doing that, I guess the design side, sort of in terms of like the branding of my blog and sort of I try and sort of create documents, and I've done sort of bullet journaling for my own studies and things like that, in terms of like artistic creative stuff, that was obviously very helpful. That maybe, you know, I guess if people don't have that design stuff, I know like logos and branding and all of that kind of stuff feels a bit scary. So for me, that was stuff that I'd done for ages. So it kind of, I spent more time focusing on maybe the actual teaching side, that a traditional teacher actually would have that stuff already covered because they've done that. So it's, I was still had a lot to learn, but maybe it was just in a different area than a traditional teacher moving online instead of, say, you know, a designer and language student becoming a teacher. But I guess in terms of like teaching, I guess it's kind of the, when I was studying design and when I was working, it was, the whole idea of it was basically that you find a problem and you have to fix it. And design in general, that's kind of how I've always thought about it, is just there's a problem for something and you just have to find the best way to fix it, or a way to fix it. And so for me, that is basically what we do when we're learning languages. That, you know, and that's sort of my approach, if there was one, is just thinking about it instead of the language as this big monster that you're trying to slay. It's just a series of lots and lots of little problems that you just need to solve to be able to just do something new. And sort of thinking about it that way and using that sort of almost design approach of thinking about it has really, it kind of helps me when I'm teaching the students to really show them, okay, there's a lot to learn, but you don't have to think about it as, you know, I need to learn 10,000 words. Right now, you just need to focus on learning this specific thing or this phrase or this idea. And then that will then build onto the next thing. And breaking it down that way, I think, just makes it a little bit more accessible, which, you know, I think as a student and a teacher is quite important.
What you just said there really reminded me of what you said earlier on about how you and your wife set this goal of, oh, well, we'll see what happens when we get to, you know, 6 months in, or 100 lessons, whichever comes first. And it's that same thing. It's transferring that same attitude, right? That same almost goal mindset of like, okay, we're not aiming for, you know, end result 10,000 words or end result of quitting the job tomorrow. We're aiming for this first step. Let's reassess when we get there. And as well, I think with something like Clear the List, I love it because it is just that monthly chance to be like, okay, hang on, where am I going? Am I doing all the right things? Is this all working? Yep, cool, right, let's carry on. Or, oh, wait a minute, let's just reassess, right, let's adjust. And all of that is so relevant to when you're working. And I think as well, you say about coming with that design experience and then allowing more time to then focus on learning the teacher stuff that was more new to you. We all come at this with different experience, don't we, in different angles. And those hats that you discussed of like wearing all the different hats and things, it's going to be so useful because there's going to be something that you already have that you can do. And there'll be other things that are just at the start, new, weaker areas for you, but you can for sure build them up. And it's
kind of that thing as well, like, I guess for me, you know, I'm generally a bit of a nerd. I'm quite happy to say that. And so like tech wise, using a computer, doing all of that sort of stuff really for me is no problem. Yeah. I'm quite comfortable being in front of a computer and doing that. So when I like rebuilt my website last year, I had to learn sort of how to do that on WordPress and hosting and all that kind of stuff. And that was new, but because I'm comfortable with technology, that's okay. Whereas maybe like somebody who's a traditional teacher, maybe they're super creative and they can do the teaching stuff, but maybe the tech side is harder. But it's like you say, there will always be some part of it that you already know or that you can transfer from what you already do. So it's, you never have to learn everything. It's maybe just different to some other people you've seen. So it's kind of, you almost don't want to compare what other people are doing almost in terms of like what they're having to do. Cause you know, if someone's been a teacher for 30 years and they go online, in terms of actual teaching stuff, you know, they're golden. There's no problem there. Whereas maybe the tech side they struggle with. Whereas someone, say more like me, tech side, no problem, but I need to focus more on the other way. So it's, you know, it's a very unique thing. And actually, when you're trying stuff, you never know if it's actually going to work. You know, when I decided to be a teacher, I remember sitting down with my wife and saying, right, I booked this course, but I might not like it. And if I don't like teaching, then I'll just try something else. It was never like I never sat down and I wasn't like, I want to be a teacher. That was never the goal. It was just, I want to share my passion of languages and earn enough money so actually I can live, you know. And actually teaching just was one of those avenues. And actually I did my first couple of lessons and I loved it. And it was actually I remember doing them and I was super nervous. It was like the first day of school and I did them. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, so I probably spent 8 hours at work doing something that actually in the grand scheme of things is irrelevant. And in 1 hour I've sat down and I've actually helped somebody improve themselves and make themselves better. And actually, you know, then they came the next time and they could do something that they couldn't do before. And that was because I'd helped them. And, you know, that instantly was like, right, okay, this is what I want to do.
That's cool. It's such a rewarding feeling and a rewarding profession in so many different ways that you can teach now as well. With that's really interesting how it started more, I'm interested in languages, what can I do with that? Rather than I want to teach, what am I interested in? I'm interested in languages, I'll teach that. So with languages being a hobby for you and language learning being something you're really interested in beforehand, that stereotype, I think, of a hobby becoming a job is that you suddenly have no off time. Everything feels like work, right? It's like, okay, well, I'm learning a language now. This is my downtime. This is my fun, relaxing time. But I need to share about this on Instagram, or I need to think and do how I would tell my students to do, right? Is this something that you felt? And if so, how have you worked on overcoming this?
So yes, definitely 100%. I think the biggest time I noticed it was when I did quit my job and I went full-time teaching. And it was then, I guess, when I was still working, the pressure of actually having lessons and teaching and doing all of that was actually not there, because realistically, if I just decided to stop, I still had a job, you know, I could pay my mortgage. There was, you know, it was fine. Whereas as soon as I did that, I kind of had to set myself like a financial goal of each month I need to earn X as a starting point, which, you know, and then it was like, okay, so I'm going to earn this. And then in so many months, I'm going to sit down and review the situation and see if it's working or see if I need to go and get a job in Morrison's because I'm not earning enough money. That literally, that was, it was, if in say 3 or 4 months, after maybe 3 or 4 or 6 months, I'm not earning enough money, I'm just going to have to go to town and just find a part-time job just to, while I'm getting it going. And fortunately, again, it was the same as the 100 lesson situation, that within, I think, 2 months, I was already hitting my target because I was quite reserved with what I wanted to earn as a real minimum. And then actually, then I was like, okay, well, I'm already doing that, so let's increase it a little bit and let's change this. And so it was just a sort of growing process. But at that time, it was very much, I didn't feel like I was in control of it. That was the biggest thing that I sort of has changed, especially probably the last 6 months. Because at one point I was like, right, every hour of every day has to be available. And even if I'm really busy, I can't take time out because I need to be getting that money and I need to be getting lessons and, you know, need to be getting reviews and all that kind of stuff. So there was, at one point, you know, I would start teaching in maybe in the morning at 8 at 9 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes I'd be going till, I don't know, midnight.
Oh,
and
my.
You know, some weeks, I think at my busiest time before I really said, okay, this is not good, I was probably, I don't know, 40 plus 45 hours a week of actual teaching plus lesson plans. So that was all the, and that was only teaching Monday to Friday. And then I was having to do all of the additional stuff that comes with running your own business all weekend. And it got to the point where I was like, look, I don't have any downtime. I'm not learning languages, which is why I do it. You know, I love languages. So I'm not doing that for myself. And I'm not like seeing my wife or anything. So.
And that's not why you quit your job, right?
Exactly. I didn't quit a stressful job just to give myself a different stressful job. You know. and so then I kind of made the big decision. I was like, right, I'm working all these hours. I'm not earning enough money. So I'm going to increase my prices and decrease the working time. And actually, you know, it's that thing. It's a really scary thing to do, to just go, do you know what money do I deserve? What do I deserve for the work I'm doing? And how much can I do before actually the quality's not there? You know, and, you know, I wouldn't say at that time I was giving bad lessons or anything like that, but there's a point where you just don't have that recovery time. And really, it's such a mentally strenuous job that you have to, you know, adapting to every student and trying to teach all these different things. You need to just have there's only so much you can do before literally your brain just says, okay, no more, you know? Yeah. And it's, you know, like I have it when I have a really busy week, I'll get to Friday afternoon and I'll be sitting and my wife will just turn around and say, Sam, just don't talk to me because at the moment you can't do English. Your English, you've used it all this week. You can't, because I'm so like, I don't know, like I've given everything that at the end I'm just like, okay, I can't really put thoughts together, but this is good. It, you know, it's kind of, I know I've worked hard and it's, but I think that's good as long as then you have that time to really recover and sort of be ready again to give everything again to the students, if that makes sense.
100%. 100%. It's not something, we're not used to A, valuing our own time, and B, valuing our own worth in terms of monetary value. Like, especially if you work in a job like most of us do or have, where someone else is deciding your salary, someone else is deciding the hours that you work. And so you don't have to think about all of that. And so then as soon as you go it alone and you're like, right, I'm going to do this, you do feel that pressure of like, oh, I need to be making all the money, so I'm hitting that target, and that means I need to work maybe a little bit later than I would like to. It's fine, because it means I'm going to hit the target, but it does become so unsustainable, doesn't it? Like you said, because then you do lose that balance. I think work-life balance is quite a tricky thing and quite an overused phrase, but it's for sure a thing. And in terms of pricing yourself for the first time as well, when you realize I need to increase my prices, that's such an emotional thing that can bring up a lot of horrible, messy feelings, you know, and doubts and all that stuff.
Yeah. It's, and like you say, even when you get through the thing of going, oh, am I actually worth an extra like $3 an hour? And when you say it to yourself afterwards, you're like, sounds so stupid, because obviously, you know, in the grand, like when you're looking at what you're offering, you know, logically that that's true, but you go through all of those things of, oh my God, I'm going to increase the prices. All the students are going to disappear. And all that hard work I've put into to get so many lessons and get these good reviews and find new students is going to be going to be worth nothing. Mm. And actually, obviously, that's not true. But it's, you know, it's like I sort of, the reason I sort of thought teaching was a good avenue is because teaching online, I'm in control of my like time. I can be more flexible, which will allow me to do the other things that I want to do. And actually, it's funny that sometimes I feel less flexible now than when I had a full-time job, because I'm more demanding of my own time. So, you know, it's sort of like, I like going to the cinema, but I wouldn't take time out of my teaching time to go and see a film sometimes, because I'm like, oh, actually, I need to do this for work, or I need to do that for work. Mm. And it's, so it's kind of giving yourself that back and going, do you know what? There's something that I want to go and do on this day. So, you know, I've worked hard, I'm doing what I'm doing, I'm going to give myself that time back. And, you know, actually saying, you know, it's okay to have an evening off and just sit and play video games is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and it's kind of, that's now, I think probably now is the best position I've been in terms of that balance, where I teach in the evenings just because of the students I have. And, you know, I'm happy to do that. But I have, say, two or three evenings a week where I don't teach. And in those times, I don't do anything work specific. So, and actually now I just use that time for my languages. So I focus on that, which is great. And I feel so good when I do that. But also the thing I've done is I don't worry about that I shouldn't be doing work if I am thinking about work. So if it's a Monday night and that's my night off, but I'm thinking about something to do with work, I don't beat myself up about that, because that's just as bad as just sitting doing work all night. So what I do is I send myself like a message. So actually I text myself, because it's just easier. And if I've got, say, like I need to post on Instagram, or I need to write something down, or I have an idea for a blog post or something, I just quickly send it to myself in a text, press send. And then I know tomorrow when I start working again, it's going to be waiting for me, and I can just let that go.
Yeah.
Because that stress of thinking about work because you're so passionate about it, and then beating yourself up going, oh, it's my night off, I should be relaxing.
If I really cared, I'd be working now. Yeah.
And then it's almost like you're stressing yourself out about not relaxing, which is just, it's just insane.
It's kind of the worst kind of stress, stressing about not relaxing. I like that. I do a similar thing. I will, if I'm like, say I'm sat in the living room or I'm cooking or whatever, and I'm like, oh, I didn't do that, I need to do that thing for work, I'll come through, I'll grab a post-it note out of the top drawer, I'll write it down, and I'll just stick it on my desk. And I really try not to have post-it notes on just like scattered on my desk, so that when they're there, I know it's urgent, I know it's something that I need to do, and that helps. But I like that text message idea as well. That's really smart.
And I actually do it with like my tasks for the day. So, because I was finding that when I start like shutting down to like go to sleep, maybe I'll read, or I'll probably realistically watch something on YouTube. And then I start sort of thinking, you get to that point and you're just about to fall asleep and you start thinking, oh, I've got to do this tomorrow, I've got to do that tomorrow, I've got to do this. And then your brain's sort of buzzing with all these things. And so all I'll do now is I literally go, right, okay, I've got these free times around my lessons, and I know I've got these things to do, and I just put them in a time slot just quickly in a text to myself, and I press send. And then the next day I've got my to-do list, and then I can just go to sleep and I'm not worrying about it, because it's, because then you have that thing, you're like, oh my God, I'm gonna forget to do this.
I'm gonna forget. Yeah, that's a great idea.
So I found that just sitting in the evening literally for a couple of minutes and doing that helps me stay calmer. Even though the evening, I always say to myself, once I finish teaching in the evening, that's downtime. I need to have maybe an hour where I don't talk about work stuff. I don't really think about it, just to sort of decompress a little bit and, you know, sleep without sort of thinking about explaining grammar, you know. So just doing that little text is just sort of the way I've found that helps me. So I think it's just my advice in that, with the balance side, is just sort of finding a way that just helps you stay calm about it. It's not necessarily about stopping working all the time. If you can stay calm and you're relaxing and you're doing that stuff, that's absolutely fine. As soon as it's causing you stress and pressure, then there's something that I would say that needs to change in that situation.
That's really great advice.
It's the stress that's the biggest problem. You know, that pressure that you put on yourself, especially, you know, if you're running the business and you've got bills to pay and you're worrying about money coming in and stuff, and you're the boss, you're the one putting the pressure on yourself to do stuff. And that's the hardest pressure to get rid of, because, you know, if it's someone else doing it, you can almost ignore it a little bit if you want to. If it's yourself, you've got nowhere to escape. So it's, you know, staying calm and relaxing about it, relaxing about the process, I think is, yeah, that's how I've found to just really, I get the best results, you know, in terms of like when I'm writing about languages or I'm teaching, because I'm calm and I'm relaxing when I can, and I'm also doing work when I'm thinking about it, that is, I'm getting much better results. And I've seen the difference just having an extra evening off a week where actually I sit and read some Italian articles or something. So, yeah. You know, for me, that's working.
I love that. I really like swimming as well. I find because I don't have access to like my phone or computer or anything like that, I can just swim, think it all through. And if it's going to be worth sticking with me, it sticks with me, because I'm not like going to go straight to sleep. And then I'll get out the pool and just jot something down, like, oh yeah, add a little task to Asana or whatever. And I love that, because it's like, you know, half an hour of just kind of floating with your thoughts, if you, so to speak. Well, literally, I guess. Okay, speaking of advice, because you've just given some really, really great advice there. What advice would you give to someone who is listening to this, starting to teach online, has no design experience? What is the easiest way to get started on that front?
Okay. I would say, in terms of design experience, it's not necessary, I would say, because I think, okay, if you're starting teaching online, and I guess you're doing similar to what I did, I joined like websites like italki, and I've also tried other ones, maybe like Cambly and things like that, for teaching English. And on those sites, you need no creative and very minimal tech skills. You just record a video, write a little text, and just put your time in a calendar, and then it's done. I guess, and even for a website, there's so many places now, I think, where, you know, things like Squarespace and stuff like that, where actually, in terms of design stuff, they do all that hard work for you, in terms of like actually sort of constructing the website. Because I know people sort of, that's a really scary thing. You know, you think, oh, coding, it's like the Matrix. You know? and actually, with the technology now, sometimes it's literally as simple as you pick a template, you choose a color, and you put your name at the top, and it's done. And it's one of those things, I think, you know, it's advice you've given me before, is it's always better to start with something imperfect and then improve it. You know, nothing will ever be perfect. So you could start trying to build a website, and you could edit it every single day for a year, and it still wouldn't be perfect, because you always find something new that you want to do. You know, it's the same as the languages and stuff. The more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. So it's kind of one of those things that even if you start with something that is literally a white page with a title at the top and says, hi, I teach X, Y, that's enough to get started. And I think it's, you know, and then as you're going, you'll find new things, and you can try stuff out and add to it. But it's, you know, there's so many tools there that take the pressure out of sort of creating something beautiful. They give you lots of stuff to work from. I don't think you need to, that shouldn't be a point of stress, if that makes, I think.
That does make sense. So what kind of tools? You mentioned Squarespace for website design being a bit easier than things like WordPress.
Yeah. Cause I use WordPress, and it is a little bit trickier in terms of like getting the templates right and stuff like that. But I'd used, so there's the two WordPresses. I used WordPress
.org is the good one. .com is the easier one.
Okay, so I started with .com. So the one that's basically like an automatic blog. So you sign up, you press go, you choose a template, and you just start writing. And that for me was how I started, and that worked perfectly fine. And, you know, that was easy. Or like, say, stuff like Squarespace. Again, with Squarespace, you can buy the domain, you can choose a template. They've even got like a logo creator and stuff, which I've tested out, even though I haven't sort of launched it on there. So, you know, there's stuff like that that's out there. But really, it's kind of, often for most creative stuff, you can kind of just Google your way through it sometimes, I find. So like if it's like you want to design a logo, if you put online logo designer, then a whole list of things where actually you can just choose shapes and put words over the top and stuff. And it's actually, I think, sometimes just starting simple and starting is better than not starting at all. Even if you just write your name at the top of a page and I just write Sam, English teacher, that's enough to get going. You know, I think it's sort of, we don't have to try and compete with the sort of aesthetic, the prettiness of Instagram and Facebook and stuff like that. It's, you know, because they've got huge companies. If you're just, you're one guy and it's your first day, you know, they've been going for, I don't know, 10 years. So they've been doing it a while. Starting with something simple is better, and then you can improve it.
Great advice. Thank you, Sam. To wrap up then, final five, quick fire round to end things. So are you ready to get started? All right. Favorite thing about teaching languages online?
Meeting interesting people I would never meet in my normal life, and helping them improve themselves and, yeah, better themselves.
Nice. Recommended read for teachers?
I'll go for the book I started this weekend. So it's an Italian one called In Altre Parole, but there's also the English translation In Other Words. And it's actually about an American author who started learning Italian, and it talks about her journey as an Italian student and moving to the country. And I just think it's really interesting as getting a really clear insight as a learner. And I think as a teacher, sometimes it's having that perspective as a learner is one of the most important things, if not more important. So I think having that, where it's a really well-written thing that shows all the problems. And if you do learn languages as well, you'll read it and go, yep, I know exactly. And it's...
They're very reassuring.
Exactly. It shows you what you're doing. And also it reminds you actually, okay, this is hard, but I know how to fix that problem. I can help someone fix that. And I think that's, for me, I think reminding myself as a student how hard it is to learn is really important to make sure that I'm always doing my best to help people learn.
Cool. Recommended podcast for teachers?
So apart from this one, of course.
Everyone's too kind. Everyone says that.
To be honest, I'm trying to think of some that are in English, because I generally at the moment I'm in Italian immersion mode. So nice. I listen to, for general language stuff, I think the Fluent Show is kind of the obvious one, just for anyone who's interested just generally in languages. There is an interesting one I listen to called The Medical Mnemonist, which is actually a podcast for medical students who are trying to learn the crazy amount of information you need to become a doctor or medical professional. But in that, there's loads of interesting memory techniques and study techniques and plans and stuff. And then again, I just think that's an interesting idea you can bring into your lessons to sort of give students ideas for memorizing vocabulary and grammar and study ideas.
Cool. I love that. Medical
Mnemonist.
Medical Mnemonist. Oh, okay. Got it. Excellent. And advice for new online language teachers. One piece of advice. You've given so much good stuff already. I'm going to squeeze some more out of you.
My advice is, remember the students are as nervous as you are. So it's that thing that when you go to an interview, you always, as the interviewee, you always think about how nervous you are. But actually everyone forgets about the interviewer is probably just as nervous, because they're the one who's got to do the interviewing. And it's the same in lessons. They will be as nervous as you. So just go and have a chat and it'll be fine. Everything's fine.
And where can people find out more about you?
So I've got my website, which is discoverfluency.com. And then I'm probably most prolific, if that's the right word, on Instagram. And that's discover_fluency.
Perfect. Sam, thank you so much for joining me today on the Teach Languages Online podcast. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Hello, me again. I hope you enjoyed that one. I tried something for the first time with editing this episode, which hopefully has made the audio quality a little better. So let me know if you do notice a difference. I'm always working to do better and to try and make things easier and more enjoyable to listen for you as well. So yeah, hopefully that worked on this episode. You can follow Sam and you can find out more, as he said there at the end, at discoverfluency.com. And that is it. You've been enjoying Teach Languages Online, the podcast for online language teachers and budding ones too, brought to you by me, Lindsay Williams of Lindsay Does Languages. And a quick reminder before we wrap up this episode, you can get your copy of my free teacher planner now. Woo-woo! Just head to lindsaydoeslanguages.com/free teacher planner. That's lindsaydoeslanguages.com/free teacher planner. You can find everything you need from this show over at lindsaydoeslanguages.com/teach languages online. Have a great week and share this episode with a friend you know will love it too. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. Bye.